Thank you very much for this exemption. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As an Austrian immigrant, I very much feel a citizen of the world. I've made Britain my second home. But if you look at my emotional attachment, it probably goes in the following almost equal attribution to my Tyrol, my native Tyrol, which is a region in Austria that some of you know is famous for skiing. Then probably comes King's College, Cambridge, because you have this strong emotional attachment to your college. Then probably comes the EU. And let me tell you why the EU. When I was 16 years old, I got a book, and I wished I could find this book. It was probably from the Club of Rome that was sent to many 16-year-olds in Europe, probably not in England, painting this vision, a very grand vision of what Europe might do. Now, as an Austrian, and probably lots of my German 16-year-old colleagues reacted to this the same way, it was quite hard for us to identify with our immediate past because the Second World War was not a great period for Central Europe. And there was a vision that you could really buy into and you could be really proud of, that you're a citizen of, we'll finally get rid of these wars, we'll finally have a vision where we can all live in harmony. And it was incredibly attractive, and I became a passionate European at the age of 16 and haven't changed my mind. Then probably comes Britain, and because I have a New Zealand wife, when there is an earthquake in Christchurch, and one of my nephews is there, I feel, I also have a New Zealand identity. So this idea of being, of having an identity that is associated with more than one country, I don't feel is a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a good thing. Now, I've contributed to the change of the law in this country, first with convincing Lady Thatcher to change the option law so that we can attract people from all over the world because we'd have option agreements similar to the US. I then participated in the Williams Committee on three important changes to allow our pension funds to invest in venture capital, to start with the R&D tax credits, which really have been phenomenally successful, and changes in income tax. Then I contributed to the Catapult. And now I still sit on the Government Digital Services Advisory Board, although I'm still Austrian. I'm very happy to be Austrian, and maybe the 30% or so that are on this government advisory board, maybe our services will no longer be required if they really implement this idea of not wanting foreigners to interfere with British affairs. But let me also tell you about sort of fundamental, because I do travel to Austria quite a bit. I've got many friends there still. And it saddens me greatly that there is such a dichotomy of attitudes to things like the euro. And on the continent, the euro is perceived, with all its flaws, as a great success. You ask anybody in this country and they will say it's a disaster. Well, it isn't. Well, it may be, but I can just tell you that there is this different attitude to it. The Schengen Agreement. You talk anybody about Schengen here, and they think it's one of the most idiotic ideas that Europe came up with. I went to school in Kufstein, which is about 2 miles from the German border. We always had to have our passports with us if we just went to see our friends in Kiefersfelden, which was the nearest village in Germany, where lots of our friends came from and lots of our school colleagues, because they would travel across the border every day to go to school in Kufstein. Now, I live in the Tyrol, where it was sort of 2 miles to the German border and 20 miles to the Italian border. To have no borders, to be able to travel freely there, has done our tourism a lot of good, and everybody really thinks very positively about Schengen. And then the attitude to Brussels. I'm proud that many European countries have actually given up some of their sovereignty and given it to a unity that's above nations. It's the only area in the world that has done that, has given a little bit of sovereignty to a supernatural. Now, there are all kinds of problems with Brussels, and you read it, of course, in the British headlines all the time, but there's also a lot of good that came out of Brussels, and it's... you know, very sad to see that these great differences in attitude to Europe. So let's go back to the facts away from the emotion. 40% of the CEOs in our portfolio companies, which are mainly deep technology companies, are non-British. 8 out of 11 of the seed funding that we have in Cambridge are non-British, many of them are from the EU. Brexit, well, you know, a bad experience, but not as bad as the reason why Brexit happened, which was the quality of the discussion that we had. I was appalled by statements, mainly by Boris Johnson, because he was the greatest proponent of these blatant lies that we've had. And I will never forget Laura Kunzberg asking the first question when he launched the campaign and proselytized his 350 million. And her first question was, but Mr. Johnson, that isn't true. He said, with the pompousness of a... well, I won't go on. with a mediocre degree from of class, with a sort of innumerate clown with a mediocre degree from in classics from Oxford.
and then lost some of your audience at that point, actually.
Well, I'll tell a few Cambridge customers. and then, so what I'm trying to do about this with the head of the computer lab in Cambridge, Andy Hopper, is to work on a thing called the evidence engine, where we will serve up in real time evidence of what people say that supports what they say, or evidence what contradicts what they say. Now, to the positive story. Cambridge is firing all cylinders, together with a number of high technology centres that we have in the UK. There are very exciting areas of new technology. David has already talked about synthetic biology. I'm working on a company at the moment that could revolutionise DNA synthesis in the same way that we revolutionised DNA sequencing with Solexa. In fact, it's some of the ex-Solexa people. And we could dominate that thing, especially if the regulations on synthetic biology were more favourable in this country than elsewhere in the world. But there is this problem with venture capital. As you, David, have already mentioned, that 25% of the venture capital comes from the EIB, and I think I'll stop here.